And it is another week. This is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of Hope Resource Center. Thank you so much for tuning in. Of course, you can learn more about Hope at investinghope.com. You can listen to the archive of this show, the podcast. You can find it on iTunes. You can also find it at Google Play app, TuneIn app, wherever podcasts are found. You can also, of course, find it on investinghope.com. Periodically, I will bring in guests. Normally, I just like to hear myself talk, and that's what I do every single week. And it's just me ranting and raving about some issue that's going on around the country concerning life and abortion. But today, I thought it was important to bring in a friend of mine named Garland Vance so we can talk about his new book. Because what I do believe is there's folks listening to this show that at times feel overwhelmed, feel burnt out, feel like their calendar is too full, or they don't know how to say no. And so they've been asked to do a lot of things at church or at work or wherever, and they find themselves looking around and going, I do not have the capacity, the time. And so, Garland, thank you for joining me today.
It's my pleasure. Glad to be here. Yeah. Thanks for having me, Andrew.
Absolutely. So you wrote a book called Getting Unbusy.
Yeah.
And so before we kind of get into the nuts and bolts of the book and the importance of that, walk us through your story. So you're not from Knoxville, but you found yourself in the greatest state in the Union.
Absolutely.
And now you're living in the greatest place in East Tennessee, in Knoxville. So walk us through the story of that brought you to the place where you could sit down and write a book like this.
Yeah, so let me go back several years. I was working with Chick-fil-A's Windshape Foundation. So I was directing one of the Chick-fil-A nonprofits and had been doing that for several years. And I decided that I needed to go to the doctor for my annual checkup, but mainly because I was having some pretty significant physical problems. I was having chronic migraine headaches about three a week. I was having forgetfulness where I would completely forget conversations that I'd had. I was having heart palpitations where I'd be sitting at my desk and all of a sudden I'd start sweating and my heart would be pounding. And so all of these physical...
So all those signs you just said, those are not good things.
Those
right?
are typically
yeah.
not good
typically
things.
Typically not
right.
good signs. Right.
So I went to the doctor and his name was Dr. Tate and I said, hey, these things are going on. And I was getting really concerned in particular because of the headaches and the forgetfulness. You know, is this a brain tumor? Is there early onset Alzheimer's? You know, what's going on? And he said, well, Garland, tell me a little bit about your life. And I said, well, I'm busy, you know, just like everybody else is. I'm busy, but it's a good busy. And he said, well, tell me about that good busy. And I said, well, you know, I'm working with this nonprofit. And said I work between 50 and 60 hours a week, which is actually less than I used to. And I said, I work with college students. It was a leadership development program for college students. And I said, so I'm normally in bed midnight or later. I said, I'm working on my doctorate in leadership and spiritual formation from a school out in Denver. And so I do that 10 to 20 hours a week. And I normally get up between 4:30 and 5 to do that. And I have three young kids and I'm married. And my wife and I are helping with our church to develop some leadership training with them. And I said, you know, that's kind of my, you know, my kids aren't overly involved, but they're each involved in some activity. And yeah, that's my life. It's busy, but it's good. Mm-hmm. And he put his hand on my shoulder and looked me in the eye and he said, Garland, I'm concerned for your life. And I said, why? And he said, because you're stressed out. And I got mad.
Yeah,
and I was like, Dr. Tate, I'm not stressed out. Yeah. Like, I don't feel stressed
out. I work for Chick-fil-A.
Right.
I can't be stressed at Chick-fil-A.
You can't be stressed out. I said, I'm not stressed out. And he said, I said, my body, I don't feel stressed out. And he said, well, your head does. Mm-hmm. Three times a week, it feels stressed out. And so I went on and said, you know, well, why would I be stressed out? And he said, because you're so busy. And I said to him, Dr. Tate, everybody's busy. And he said, I know, and it's killing us all. And for me, that was a wake-up call. And I was working on my doctorate, and so I decided, hey, I'm going to start studying. I want to see if this guy actually knows what he's talking about and start studying busyness and its effect on leaders. And so fast forward, how did that lead me to and my family being in Knoxville, Tennessee? So we worked with Windshape up until 2015, actually went out to Texas for a couple of years to be a leadership development pastor out there. And while we were out there, my wife and I decided that we were going to start our own company to help leaders live and lead with purpose, productivity, and peace. And getting unbusy was a key part of that. And we looked and we were like, you know what? If we're going to do this business that's helping leaders all over the place, we can live wherever we want to. Mm-hmm. And where do we want to live? And she and I were both Carson Newman grads.
Well, Tennessee.
Yeah. Yeah. And we love Tennessee. Love this. East Tennessee, love the Smoky Mountains. And so we said, hey, let's do something crazy. Let's pack up everything we own and move to Tennessee. And we have a few friends who are here, you know, but let's fulfill this dream of living where we want to live. And so that's why we're here in Knoxville.
Well, and I think it's important. I went to a meeting of pregnancy center leaders, I guess back last spring, maybe. We met in Arizona, and me and one other person were by far the youngest in the group, and just kind of listening to everybody, and the whole session that particular meeting for the few days we were there was on burnout and on stress and on work and identity, and it's interesting, even in a ministry context and in a nonprofit ministry setting, where we tell ourselves our identity's not wrapped up in stuff, our identity's not wrapped up in our work, our identity's wrapped up in our Christ and our Savior, yet we find ourselves being wrapped up and identifying with what we do and our title.
Yeah.
And so it's dangerous.
Absolutely.
And I remember one of the guy leading the meeting, that particular meeting, had gone through it himself and actually hit the wall and actually dealt with burnout and had to deal with that as a leader of an organization with his family, with his board, what that looks like from here on out. And I just remember watching that going, am I on my way to there?
Right.
Or have we created enough boundaries and things in our life where we're not going to get there? Because it's easy to be that guy. And I think even in particular in a nonprofit setting, we find ourselves seeking to justify
right
our work to the for-profit world. So we want our calendar to look as busy as their calendar.
Right. And we want to feel as exhausted as they feel.
And it's a dangerous game we play. And so one thing that, and I want to get your thought on this. One thing that the guy that leading that session said to us was, how do we define success? And he said, for him, someone had to step into his life and say, success is sitting on the bank of a river in the middle of the day and not feeling guilty about it.
Mm.
And out of everything that was said that whole week, I was like, wow, that, and you know, clearly it doesn't have to be a bank of a river. It could be whatever you're into. But the point is, doing that in the middle of the day and not feeling guilty about it. And I think we create this sense of guilt and shame when we're not in the office, when we're not answering emails, when we're not, you know, dealing with this or dealing with that, but getting to a place where we're okay with saying, maybe I can just sit for a second.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's interesting that in the Bible, you never see God tell people to speed up.
Mm-hmm.
It's always about slowing down, taking time off, you know, whether it's Sabbath, whether it's year of Jubilee, and what we often do is we think of the word recreation as a bad word and as a bad practice. And I define recreation as any activity we do for the sheer enjoyment of doing it.
Right.
It doesn't have to be a productive activity. And so I would say, I would agree with that definition of saying success is when I have the mental and the emotional and the spiritual freedom to be able to do something I enjoy for the sheer sake of doing it all the time. That doesn't mean I have to do it all the time, right? We're not looking to spend 168 hours a week sitting on the bank of a river. We want to be purposeful. We want to be productive. But we also want to give ourselves the freedom to slow down and enjoy life.
Yeah. When it's interesting, in my role, there's times where, and I've had this, where the board chair will come in and say, look, you know, it's evaluation time or whatever. We talked with other staff members, and all of them have consistently said that they're happy and they love that you're here.
Right.
But you're here all the time.
Right.
And so, you know, and I immediately turn into like you were with the doctor. Whoa, whoa, whoa. I mean, but I'm doing good stuff.
Right.
I'm supposed to be here. And I'm supposed to put in the time. And of course, I'm putting in more hours, you know, and those things. And so we start justifying it instead of sitting back and slowing down and going, hold on. I believe my wife has said I'm there too much. I believe my kids have, you know,
yeah.
And start recognizing those things in our life where we maybe we are kind of stretched thin.
Right.
And giving ourselves the freedom to do that. So when we come back from break, what I'd like to do is kind of put us there. So what are some things we can do to evaluate
sure.
where we are? Are we at a place where we need to, and I think for the most of us, we're all going to look and go, yeah, there's probably some things we need to pull back on.
Right.
So let's talk about that when we come back.
Sounds great.
Just because I'm leaving, it don't mean it. I won't be right by your side. When you need me, you can't see me.
So now we're back with Garland. Garland, I know we talked before we went on air about country music. Okay, that's Luke Combs' newest song. And if you're a dad out there, this song, man, so good.
Get you teary-eyed.
So every single time. And my kids, on the way to school every morning, they get to each pick a song. And so as long as it takes to get to the school, we'll just see how many songs we can get through. And so my daughter has been picking this one, which really, you know, brings a tear to my eye that she wants to sing the song and listen yeah. to the song. But the process of being a dad, and you know this, is such a gift. And it's one that the hardest part for me is what legacy are we leaving?
Right.
Will my kids one day say that dad did a lot of great things for the country, dad did a lot of great things for the life movement, but was really kind of a bad dad?
Right.
Or will they say, daddy did a lot of great things, but first and foremost, he was a dad
yeah.
to us and loved us well and loved our mom well, those type things. And so it's always interesting to me when I hear songs like that and I'm going, yeah, one day I'm going to leave.
Right.
One day the Lord's calling me home. What am I preparing them for? And so I think that's why this book is important too, is it's not just to make you a better leader. It's not just to
right.
make you a better you know, staff member or better whatever. It's also something we need to look at our own lives and go, are we allowing our calendar and our time to be so full of stuff
yeah.
that we're missing out on being a dad, that we're missing out on being a husband, that we're missing out on being a mom or a wife or a son either.
Sure.
You know, I think my grandmother right now is dealing with some health issues, and I think about, am I so busy that I can't make time to go
right.
be engaged and be present in those moments? And so it's important. So as we were talking about before we went to break, what are some signs that we can even look in our own lives and kind of start making an assessment? Okay, these are things that I need to somehow, I think a lot of people, if you're like me, you look at this thing and you go, okay, yeah, sure, I'm busy, but how can I really assess where
right.
I'm at? Are there some resources out there that can help with that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing that I would say is let's define what busyness is, because busyness, as I define it, is an overcommitment to too many good commitments.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of us are like, well, I'm busy, but it, you know, it's good. Well, none of us are busy with bad things.
Right.
You know, unless you're a dictator or a drug dealer, you know, you're not really busy with bad things. We're busy with work, with mm-hmm. With stuff at home, with kids' activities, with stuff that we're passionate about. But when you add all of those things together, they can become bad. Just like my son, a few years ago, we went to a sushi restaurant, and he ordered a sushi roll that was way too big for him. But he decided to take the challenge and ate mm-hmm. the whole thing. And it was 3 years before he could eat sushi again. Well, sushi's good, but if you eat too much of it, it becomes a bad thing. That's what busyness is. And so I would say there's a couple of signs that I talk about, and then there's an assessment that I can point you to. The signs are hurry, worry, and scurry.
Okay.
I describe those as the busyness vortex. They suck us into to busyness. So hurry is, am I moving fast? Am I talking fast? Am I driving fast? Am I constantly trying to get things done faster? When somebody comes in and interrupts me, am I sitting there kind of in my mind, snapping my fingers and being like, just get to the point, let's go. All right, so there's hurry. And then hurry leads us to worry, and worry is, how am I going to get it all in? How am I going to pack everything into this day? There's just no way that I can get it all in. And that begins to feel like stress and overwhelm and exhaustion when you begin to worry. And then the last is scurry, and scurry is where our minds can't even concentrate on something for more than a couple of seconds. We are so distracted that I can't pay attention to what my kids are doing, or I can't pay attention to the big project that's right in front of me because I'm constantly thinking about the 50 other things that need to happen. So those are three of the big signs, hurry, worry, and scurry, that I see. And I would just point people, there's an assessment that I developed. I found the 20 most common signs of people who were stressed, overwhelmed, and exhausted. So if you go to getting, there's no G at the end of that, getting
unbusy. Yeah, well, Tennessee, we know that.
Right,
yeah,
gettingunbusybook.com/assessment. It's an assessment that'll take you about probably 5 minutes max, but that assessment will give you a score at the end, and we'll put you in a category that says this is how stressed, overwhelmed, and exhausted you are, or how unbusy you are.
Yeah, and I think it's, you know, sometimes it's hard for us, you know, Christian, non-Christian alike, just for people in general to self-reflect. And I often talk about this on this show when we look at even the issues that are facing our country, the issues that are facing our world. The reason why our country has been able to sustain itself is because we have been willing to look in the mirror and reflect and go, slavery's not good.
Right.
We need to fix it. You know, and then after that, hey, it's probably not good. We have some folks in our population that can drink out of certain water fountains and not others. We need a civil rights movement.
Right.
Women should be able to vote. Like the reason it's been able to sustain for this long is because we've been willing to look in the mirror and go, there are some corrections that need to be made. And I think sometimes as individuals, we may see these things pop up, but we're unwilling to look in the mirror and make an assessment and go, I need to make a correction here.
Right.
And because we allow the narrative of society and culture to say, no, you're supposed to be busy.
Right.
You start hearing these things, you're supposed to have a full calendar. You're supposed to be go to bed exhausted, not because you've been spending time with your family when you get home, but because you've worked from dusk to dawn.
Right.
And so we have a tendency to not reflect. So what are some things that you've seen, some ways to encourage folks to truly, I mean, obviously you have the assessment that's going to force you to do that, but what are some other ways where we can recognize, or maybe for us, it's my spouse. I see it in my spouse, or I see it in this friend, or I see it in my brother or my sister. What are some ways we can best approach those things and kind of help with that assessment?
Sure. So I would say, you know, one is listen to the language that you use. When somebody asks you how you're doing, do you respond, hey, I'm so busy
right
now? And just beginning to listen to the language that you use. And another question that I find is really helpful is to start by saying, do you know what your dreams and your priorities are? And a lot of people will say, yeah, I know exactly what my dreams and priorities are. And then to ask the question, do you have the time, energy, and attention to do them? And if the answer to that question is no, that's a pretty good assessment of that you're stressed, overwhelmed, and exhausted, you're headed toward burnout, you're too busy. And at that point, you really have to make a decision. And the decision is busyness okay for me? Am I okay with being busy? That's the first step I talk about in the book, is you have to decide, is busyness worth it physically, mentally, emotionally, relationally, productively, organizationally? is it worth it? And if not, what am I going to do about it? And once you make that decision, then there are steps that follow with that. But that's the critical step that people have to make. Is busyness worth it?
Well, and I think, too, we have to at some point go, yeah, there's some of us that because of our roles or whatever, we're going to have things. Our calendar's going to be full.
Absolutely.
But are we implementing times in that? Are we maybe you're just a schedule guy? Okay, well then schedule some time of doing nothing.
Right.
Actually schedule it.
Yeah.
And two, because of our current culture, I mean, I feel my kids currently do not play in any organized sports.
Right.
By the time my oldest is 8, by the time I was his age, I was playing in basketball and baseball. My brothers were, like, we were going. There was one part of our life growing up where my mom was literally taking us to 3 different fields in 3 different areas of our little small town because we were all playing something.
Right. Yeah. I remember those days.
And so there's moments where someone asks, "Oh, is Gavin playing X sport?" And I'll go, "No, he's not." And I feel shame.
Right.
I feel judgment from people. "Oh, well, he's not playing a sport. Why do you not have him in something?"
Right. What kind of parent are
you,
Andrew?
Right. And then we were at Salsarita's last night, Sunday evening. It was 2 nights ago. We were at Salsarita's, and there was a bunch of teams coming in to eat. And I remember I looked at my wife and I said, "Now, when I was a kid, Sunday was off limits. Like, you just didn't have practice. You didn't have games. You didn't." So we now have created a society and a culture where there is no day off limits.
Yeah.
So we fill up every moment, even what we would have traditionally looked at as the Sabbath. Even where I grew up, Wednesday night was off limits.
Right.
And so Wednesday is long gone. And now even most people I know that have their kids playing something, Sunday is just another day.
Yeah.
And so as we recognize those things, when we come back from break, what I want to get to is, okay, if what are some things that point to, and as we were talking off air, burnout is not just some word that's made up. It's a real thing.
Right.
And so what are some things that we can look at and go, not only am I too busy, but I've reached a place of burnout. And then let's walk through what that looks like in relationships. What's that look like for business?
Right.
And how do we come back from that? And what are some things we can put in place for that?
Sounds great.
All right, we'll be back with Garland in a second.
Come on and tell somebody about Jesus and all the great things He has done. If He had not rescued me, come on and tell somebody. Come on and tell somebody.
Is that Danny Gokey? I remember Danny Gokey was on American Idol. You remember that?
I do
back
remember
in the day.
That, yeah.
And look at him. Look at him now. Him, that's terrible grammar. But Danny Gokey wanted, I don't know what path he wanted to go down, but Jesus found him somewhere along in the way, and it's really worked out for him. It's always interesting to see those people go on American Idol, not win, and then they kind of carve their own path.
Right.
Mandisa's another one that's had success in the Christian music world, and Danny Gokey, he's good. He's got a good voice. So that has nothing to do with what we're talking about today, Garland. But as we ended up the last segment, we were let's quickly walk through. Okay, look, burnout isn't just a thing that you made up. It's an actual condition that can happen. And so what are the – I think you were telling me there was 3 things that you can look at and know, okay, I've kind of reached burnout level.
Right. Yeah, so burnout has 3 stages that you go through. And if you find yourself in any one of these stages, then you're headed toward burnout. So the first stage is a loss is emotional exhaustion. You're not just physically tired. Like, you're worn out at the core of your being. You are done. You're exhausted. The second stage is what's called depersonalization. And depersonalization is when you begin to actively dislike and resent the people that you care about the most. So this one's really dangerous, especially if we want to love others as we love ourselves. It becomes, instead of loving others, I begin to resent them. Mm-hmm. And when I do that, I treat them as objects or as obstacles. And then that leads to the third stage. And the third stage is loss of sense of personal accomplishment. Like, it doesn't matter what I do, it just feels like it's never enough. And I can't look at myself in the mirror and go, hey, I did a good job today. I look at myself in the mirror and I'm just constantly disappointed. Mm-hmm. So those are your three stages of burnout that you that a person can go through. And when I've coached people, a lot of times I'll say, hey, let's look at those and where are you? And more often than not, they're going to be able to quickly say stage one, two, or three.
Well, I think too, with this audience, it in ministry, it's a, you think, well, of course I love my neighbor. But when we start to really assess and reflect on where we are, we start to go, I resent them. Especially when it comes to the life issue, which is kind of the issue I've climbed that mountain and stuck the flag in, and this is going to be the issue that drives me because it's a gospel issue. It's easy for folks that, regardless of what side of the fence they're on, to just start seeing as an issue that doesn't necessarily affect image bearers, but it's just an issue out there.
Right.
And so when we see it as an issue, we start to see people as political pawns, or, man, they're going to really help my narrative, or they'll hurt my narrative, instead of seeing them as what we would believe is image bearers, that were created in the image of God. They deserve a certain level of love, value, and respect. And so how do we walk through that? So as we're talking about all these things, I think people may be listening and going, like, I get it. I get that I need to kind of maybe make some changes, but I don't even know where to start. This book does a great job of kind of walking us through there's five steps that you would say to kind of get to a place of, you know, purpose and putting things in their proper position and priority and those type of things. So walk us through those five steps.
Yeah. So the first step is, I mentioned it earlier, you have to decide. And I was trained in seminary, so everyone has to start with D. Okay. Mm-hmm. But the first one is you have to decide, is it worth it? And if it's not, am I going to kill busyness before it kills me? The second one is deconstruct. And what I found in my research is that most people wanted to go straight from deciding to beginning to design the life that they wanted to live. Mm-hmm. And when they did that, what happened is they actually added more commitments onto an overcommitted life. And so the second step, instead of designing the life you want to live, the second step is you begin to deconstruct. You deconstruct inhibiting beliefs. In particular, busyness is driven by these three beliefs of I need to be more, I need to do more, and I need to get more. So we deconstruct inhibiting beliefs. We also learn to deconstruct unwanted commitments. Most people are committed to things that are good, but they don't actually want to do. They said yes out of guilt or shame or for some other reason, or, you know, they just outgrew it over time. And so that exercise alone of deconstructing unwanted commitments typically ends up freeing about 10 hours a week from a person's calendar. The third step is then we begin to design. What's the life that I want to live? But I take it a little bit different way. Instead of just saying, hey, what are my dreams and priorities? We get there eventually. But before that, we begin to say, what's the pace I want to live in? And how do I design what I call the core four? And the core four is relationships, rest, recreation, and reflection. And what I found is the most purposeful, productive, and peaceful people built those into their schedule first and then built everything else around it. Who are the most important people and the most energizing people? Mm-hmm. What's the recreation that's important to me? Do I want to go sit on the side of the bank of the river? And so then we begin to design, what are my dreams and priorities? For me, it was moving to Knoxville, Tennessee was a dream and a priority. The fourth step is we begin to develop. So after we've designed the life we want to live, then we begin to implement it in our habits, in our calendar, and even in the way that our mind processes information. And then the final stage is we draw others in. And in that step, it's about going to our family, our friends, and our teammates at work, mm-hmm. or if you lead a division or an organization, your entire division or organization, and beginning to say, let's get everybody involved in this way of getting unbusy so that we can live with purpose, productivity, and peace.
Well, and I think, too, I think those are very practical steps, and that's the... I think that's the beauty of this book is the practicality of it. I'm too busy. What do I need to do? Well, here.
Right.
Here's what you need to do.
Yeah.
And that's very helpful. And I think too, as people that you know, most people that are listening to this are plugged into a church somewhere and they're serving and they're doing all those things. And I think what you're not saying is, look, cut ties with all that and just...
Yeah, no, not at all.
Not at all. I think you're just calling us to a healthy place of serving, a healthy
right.
place of busy that isn't defining, that gets us to a place of when someone asks, how are you doing? Your answer isn't first and foremost on the tip of my tongue at the front of my head is, I don't
I'm
have
busy,
time to do
right.
anything else. I'm busy.
Yeah.
That's a sad state of affairs.
Yeah.
When, and I think some people say it in kind of a prideful way. When I hear it from people, it makes me sad. and so that's not what I want to hear you say when I ask how you're doing. I don't want to hear you say, "Man, I'm just so busy."
Right.
Because I'm going, well, that's sad to me.
Yeah. And it's a self-inflicted injury.
Yeah, it is,
you know?
Absolutely.
And it sounds harsh to say that, but it truly is for most people a self-inflicted injury. So when you say, I'm busy, it's not like you're actually talking about how you're actually doing. All you're telling me is that you haven't been able to say no to
right.
anything.
And it's not a... And typically when people say that, they're not saying it with a smile on their face.
Right.
And so it's not a sense of, I'm busy, and man, things couldn't be better. That's usually not what it's followed
right.
up with.
Right. It's I'm overwhelmed.
Yeah.
I can't handle. Please don't ask me to do anything.
I went to a workshop one time at a conference when I used to work at the University of Tennessee, and so there was, you know, people that worked in higher education, and the first slide of the presentation was his calendar, and I was sitting there going, this is interesting. And he was like, I'd put my calendar up against anybody's calendar. And I was like, well, that's sad.
Right.
Your identity is wrapped up in how busy you are. That doesn't tell me anything about what kind of leader you are. If anything, it tells me you're not really a good one.
Right.
And you're stretched so thin that all you care about is filling that calendar up. But what are you filling it up with? Is
right.
there any purpose behind it? Is there any greater vision behind you filling it up with all those meetings and appointments?
Yeah.
And so it tells me a lot. And I haven't seen him or talked to that guy. It's been years ago. But part of me wonders, has he reached burnout? And I'm
yeah.
sure he has.
Yeah.
Because if that's what you lead with, then your identity is wrapped up. What I've had to do is come to grips with even sitting at my desk and reading a book periodically and not feeling guilty about it. And
yeah.
if somebody walks by my office, not feeling like I have to explain or justify, well, no, I'm taking 30 minutes for just me at this moment
right.
and being okay with that.
Right.
And that's not easy. And I still struggle with it. But man, if we can start implementing some of those things in our lives, then we will be a better employee. We will be a better leader, a
yeah.
better dad, a better husband, a better wife, a better mom.
Yeah, and you have so much more. There's space and there's margin in your life to discern the voice of God, right? What is actually, what is God actually calling me to do, and what does he want me to do? But then to respond, you know, every day has surprises, interruptions, and emergencies. And sometimes those surprises are delightful. They're wonderful. We see an old friend or, you know, we run into somebody on the side of the road and, you know, and if we don't have any margin in our lives, we don't have room for the surprises, interruptions, and emergencies. And so part of it is building time into your schedule for surprises, interruptions, and emergencies because
yeah.
they're going to happen every day.
They're absolutely going to happen. And then you can, especially being a dad, then you can engage in those moments that are important to your child and not go, look, daddy will deal with that in a little bit, but I got stuff to do.
Right.
And what we try to do at Hope is I tell the staff, like, we cannot claim to be pro-life if we're not pro-life in our own building, in our own homes.
Yeah, that's so true.
So if you gotta, if you want to be a part of your kid's life, or there's practice, or there's a doctor's appointment, or there's a social at school, or whatever, you know, giving margin in there so that we can meet out and do those things. We'll talk more when we come back with Garland. So we played a Christmas song last week because I believe you celebrate Christmas year-round. And if you don't want to celebrate the birth of Jesus year-round, that's on you. But me personally, I think you should. And so we're going to, if you're listening going, hold on, was she saying Noel? Yeah. Yeah, she was. And so we're going to do that until Christmas gets here because I'm also trying my best to bring cold weather. So whatever I can do.
Oh, please.
I sit in my office and I have a flat screen on the wall, and it's, I just put it on YouTube, and I put a fireplace scene with instrumental Christmas music. That is what plays in my office all day long because I want it so bad to be cold and not 1,000 degrees. So that was a Christmas song, and you should start listening to Christmas music now. That's what I would encourage you. If you don't take anything else away from this conversation, take that one away. And so, Garland, thanks again for stopping by and joining us today. I do think this is important. I do think what you said in the first segment, what you said about how the doctor looked at you and said, I'm concerned about your life, and your response was, hey, we're all busy. And he says, yeah, and it's killing us.
Yeah.
I think in our society and culture, I think it is. I think it absolutely is. And it's not just killing us physically. It's killing relationships.
Yep.
It's killing, it's killing marriages. It's killing relationships with our children. And man, we gotta do something about that. And this is a great step in that. So where can people get the book? Where can they learn more? Tell us again where we can get the assessment so we can...
Start grab the assessment at Getting, no G at the end, gettingunbusybook.com. You can get the assessment there. You can also order it from Amazon there. The book is on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. Any online retail bookstore should have that available. And you typically have to look up the name Garland Vance because Getting doesn't have a G at the end.
Right.
So it's a little confusing to Amazon. But look up the name Garland Vance and you'll find it there. And then I'd say they can also, I do a 5 or so minute video every 6 days a week, every day except Sunday. And I do that on my Facebook page, which is Dr. Garland Vance, if you want to check it out there. And a lot of it is about busyness, but it's also taking it beyond that to talk about purpose, productivity, and peace.
Yeah. And I think too, that we have to at some point understand, especially as Christians, are we at a place where we want to make sure we're creating things in our lives and creating boundaries and reflecting enough where we truly are being the dad that we've been called to be, the husband that we've been called
right.
to be, the leader that we've been called to be, the Christian that we've been called to be. And so it's okay to reflect and go, yeah, I'm probably too stretched.
Yep.
Maybe I should say no to that. What we're not saying is, we're not telling you to go to your pastor today and say, I'm not volunteering in any shape, form, or fashion in anything anymore. Like, that's not what we're saying.
Not what we're saying.
What we're saying is there's a healthy way of doing that.
Yeah.
And there's things that we've been called to. And there's going to be busier seasons than other seasons,
yep.
certainly. But are we recognizing those moments and being intentional in those moments to create, like you said, the where we can be prepared for or have time for the surprises
right.
That may pop up, the emergencies that may pop up. And that's so important that I think, as I was growing up and looking in kind of the direction I felt like the Lord was calling me in, I didn't have a lot of those conversations,
right.
and so you try to figure those things out. I think for a young person that's in college, that's coming up, this is great for them to already start processing what that looks like for them.
Right, right. Yeah, college students are often the worst when it comes to busyness. So and that was actually where my ministry started and where I started noticing busyness at first was, oh my gosh, college students are comparing their busyness to my busyness.
Right,
come
right.
on. And then realizing, no, it's an epidemic no matter what age you are.
Yeah, well, they got to play video games and they got to, you know, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding, college folks that are listening. Kind of, I'm not kidding, kind of kidding. But we do have to set boundaries up, I think, too, and understanding that we don't, especially if you're going into ministry, that your identity, like we purposely went into ministry because we want to move the gospel and see the kingdom expand, and instead we create these nonprofits and stuff where our identity is wrapped up in all that stuff and not the call that we sensed in the beginning. And so it's a dangerous place to go for sure. But I think the book's going to help a lot of people. I appreciate you taking the time out and talking about it. I appreciate you sitting down and writing all of these thousands of words to point us to kind of slowing down a little. I love what you said that in Scripture, God very seldom, if ever, tells anyone to speed up.
Yeah.
He says, let's slow down and think through this.
Yeah.
And I love the term Selah. Like, hey, let's slow
pause
down.
And
let's pause and reflect on this. So, Garland, thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thanks,
I hope people pause and reflect on this for sure.
Thanks,
we'll talk to you next week.